Today is going to be an introduction or an overview of church revitalization. I think possibly half the people here have already heard what I had to say. All I can say is, if you allow me to quote the scriptures for this, Jude wrote, Jude, verse 5, and though you already know all this, I want to remind you. That's Jude, verse 5. So, this, we're always reminding and preaching to ourselves. I'm preaching to myself as well. To think, this is what we have to do in church revitalization. So, this is an introduction, an overview, and if you've heard it before, let God allow it to penetrate your heart again and say, this is what we want to do. So basically I say that revitalization is two things. It's a vision and a process. We have to know where we're going. That is the vision. And the process is how we get there. Now, what I don't mean by process is I'm going to tell you A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And when you've done that, your church will be revitalized. It doesn't work like that. What I mean by a process is that it will take time to bring this vision to some kind of fruition in a local church. There's no magic formula for this. So when I say process, don't see it in that kind of mechanical way. That's not what I mean. What I mean is we need to know where we're going, but it will take time to get there. That's what I mean by a vision and a process. Now, these figures I've found in North America. I've seen it, I saw it a few years ago on the websites of several different denominations, among others, Evangelical Free, Southern Baptist, and Assembly of God. So if the three, I found it on three very different denominations, there must be a certain amount of truth in it. Don't worry about the actual percentage, that's not important. But what they were saying was, there is a need for revitalization because only 10 to 15% of churches were healthy and multiplying. And between 70 and 75% were plateaued or even declining. And 10 to 15% were at risk. There was a danger of just simply disappearing, extinction, if you want to use a sort of biological term. So that's not very encouraging. On the other hand, it shows why this network is important. I don't know what the figures are for your country, but I did try to get the figures for France. I chair the Evangelism Commission of the what we call the National Council of Evangelicals in France, which is the Evangelical Alliance, 22 different denominations attached to it. Basically, all French evangelicals belong to the Evangelical Alliance in France. It's a pretty incredible thing. The denominations and all the parachurch movements. It really is an incredible work of God. Anyway, I contacted the leaders of all these denominations, and this is not a scientific survey. I just said, this is what the Americans have found. Subjectively, intuitively, how many of your churches would you put in healthy and multiplying? How many would you put in plateauing or declining? And how many would you put into risk of disappearing? The figures were slightly better. They said 51% healthy and multiplying, 38% plateaued or declining, and 11% at or near risk of disappearing. So that's half and half. Even in France, where we have seen so much progress of the gospel, just to remind you if you don't know, 50,000 evangelicals in 1950, 750,000 today. And the number of practicing evangelicals is about the same, is about a quarter of the number of practicing Catholics in France today. Which, who would have said that 50 years ago? So even so, 50% of the churches needed revitalization. So it's a very important thing. We have a slogan in France, the National Council of Evangelicals, one for 10,000. We want an evangelical church all over France for an average of 10,000 inhabitants. But we're never going to get there if every church we plant, a church disappears. So it's really important to be working on revitalization. For those who know me, I'll put this picture every time. It's an animal that became extinct in 1936, the Tasmanian tiger. And so I have this picture on my desk with the thought, let's not allow this to happen to our churches. This was the last specimen of the Tasmanian tiger that was shot to death because the farmers thought it was killing the other animals, 1936. Beautiful little animal, really. It's a, what do you call it? I can't remember the word, like a kangaroo. When they have the pouches to the, they when they give birth, the animal is in a pouch. Marsupial, thank you. Yeah. It was a marsupial. So it's interesting to think very quickly. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but what may be some signs of decline? And all sorts of things we've given, but these are some of the most important ones. People no longer dare to invite people from outside the church because they think they won't understand. The Christians understand the jargon, the Christians understand maybe what's going on, hopefully, but someone from the outside wouldn't. Secondly, there'd be a numerical decrease and probably an increase in the average age in the church because new people aren't coming in from the outside. Structures and activities get more important than life in Christ. In other words, routine sets in. The expression I like in English is going through the motions, but I've discovered that most countries don't understand that that expression. It means you're in a routine, you're doing things, but all you're doing is just doing what you've already done without knowing why or what the implications are, and it's routine. Family dynasties rule the church often, so certain subjects become taboo and you're focusing more on maintenance than any sort of growth. And so often the founders of the church don't want to change things because that's the way they started and they don't want to do anything different. There's a culture of taboos and a resistance to change. That people want to live in the past as a kind of nostalgia of the good old days. And this can stop people wanting to change because they can say, it worked well in the past. So why don't we go on doing it now? That is a danger. I remember I quoted this to some people yesterday. I was in a church in Lithuania, and the pastor told me that some people in the church go back to the fall of communism, when on a Sunday afternoon, for example, they would take a couple of guitars and walk through the streets of the town and say, follow us, come back to our meeting place and we preach the gospel to you. And people did, because there was a real thirst for God at that time. But some of the people in the church are saying, we're not seeing conversions now because we're not doing that. But the pastor said, quite rightly, if I walked around the town with my guitar, no one would follow me today. It's just, they wouldn't do it. So people are stuck in old ways of doing it. So it's not a question of changing the message or the gospel. It's how we do things in today's world. And so the Great Commission can be forgotten of going out to all peoples and baptizing them and teaching them all that Jesus taught. So those are certain signs of the need for revitalization. I just want to say very quickly, because we haven't got time to, it'd be interesting to have a whole session on this, but I think revitalization is scriptural. Now, I've heard it said in France, people say it's easier to give birth than to raise the dead. And what they mean by that is easier to plant a new church than to raise a church up to new life. I don't agree. I think there's a cycle that you see all the way through scriptures. In Judges, for example, Judges 2:10, it says that a new generation grew up which didn't know what the Lord had done. And so is always necessary for each new generation to understand the gospel. Think of the cycles of the kings of Judah and Israel. A good king and then a king not so good, or even worse king. And then at some point the Lord revives and revitalizes the country with a good king. That is a pattern you see all the way through the Old Testament. And another pattern you can see is when they were exiled and they came back from exile and they were supposed to be rebuilding Jerusalem, rebuilding the temple. And some of the prophets had to say things like, my house, this is Haggai chapter 1, my house remains a ruin while each of you is busy with his own house. And what happens is, in a materialistic world, the church can take second place while each person is working on their own house, on their own well-being, if you like. And well-being becomes more important than serving, if you like. That could almost be a sort of a slogan for today: well-being trumps serving. And in the New Testament, it was mentioned today, the seven letters to the churches. And why? Because there were different problems. Two of the churches were faithful, Smyrna and Philadelphia, but five of them are told to repent for different reasons. Ephesus, the loss of their first love. Pergamum, the need to fight against error. Thyatira, the need to fight against sin and immorality. Sardis, the church has the reputation of being alive, but is dead. And Laodicea, the church is lukewarm. Lots of different reasons for writing to these churches. And in each case, you have the sentence that you need to repent, to come back to first things, and to realize what the situation is. And as you'll see later on, the very first stage of church revitalization is to have a clear view of where the church actually really is, to evaluate where you are. So one of the other things I wanted to say about revitalization is that there's no quick fix. And although the principles, I think, I'm very convinced the principles are the same everywhere, yet there are so many different contexts in which the churches can be found that we need to bear that in mind. I've put four of them there. Firstly, the region within Europe. It's very different, I think, between more northern Europe with a long Protestant tradition, with maybe big churches, church buildings, and which are emptier and emptier, as people think, as the years go by, or sold because no one is going to them. That is a different situation to Eastern Europe, which is more complex. We were talking about this the other day, and Daniel Fodorian, who runs the year-round mentoring with me, did something with his hands. He said, Eastern Europe. He did that. It's a bit complex, because in the same church, you may have older people who have been through a time of persecution in Soviet times. Then you have another generation when everything opened up and a lot of people had a spiritual hunger. And today, sort of postmodern Western thought has come along and the young people don't understand that. You've got the three generations in one church. And that is sometimes why revitalization is necessary. But for Southern Europe, and there are at least two of us from Southern Europe, some are from Greece and some are from France, the problem is different. There isn't a long evangelical tradition. A lot of church planting has taken place. And our problem, I think, is very often that we haven't trained the next generation to take over from the founders of the churches we planted. Yeah. Manos is there, yes. That's, so at least someone agrees with me. The second thing is the different contexts of revitalization, the ecclesiastical tradition. If you're in an independent church, it may not be the same as an evangelical church belonging to a denomination, Baptist, which again may not be the same as if you're in a more historic church, Lutheran or Reformed. That you have to take that into account. It's going to be look slightly different according to those ecclesiastical traditions. The third thing is, where is the church situated? Is it in a megapolis, a big city, or a city, or a town, or a rural area. Now, my experience has been in Paris. I love the city. It's when you go to the country, it's dangerous. There are sort of animals and cows and sheep and things. But in Paris, it's safe. It's good. It's interesting. It's great. And when I always make people laughing, because some people don't understand this. When I'm coming back in the train or maybe after a weekend away, and I'm approaching Paris, and I feel myself relaxing. I'm back in the city where life really is. But that's so. I know from my experience a bit how to revitalize a church in a megapolis, but I wouldn't know where to start in a rural area. But some people are called to do that. And we have to, again, say the principles are the same, but the way we do it will be different. And the fourth thing is where the stage the church is at. This, we have this bell curve. This happens in society in all sorts of places. It can happen in a club. It can happen in a company where they're making certain things and there's no longer a market, so the company declines. But it happens in a church as well, where often a church is planted. It can go well for a long time, and then it starts to plateau. And afterwards, it starts declining and reaching. So where does revitalization happen? My pointer, yeah. This is probably where revitalization is firstly necessary. When the growth is starting to slow down and move and to plateau. Although most people don't realize till you get to about here and they see things are really not growing very well. And unfortunately, some people then don't start doing anything till it gets to there. And it's not impossible to revitalize a church, but it's much more difficult here, here than it would be here. And here is probably where it should take place. So again, if you take all these four factors, which I just said together, that shows that your situation may not be the same from each other. But what we're trying to say is that the principles are the same. What are these principles? What is the vision? The vision is to create a healthy church. A healthy church. It's not firstly numbers. That's not the first thing. The first thing is a healthy church. And I define a healthy church exceedingly simply. This is interesting. One of the members in our group just now said they wanted a simple answer. A healthy church is a group of redeemed Christians where the gospel is central, the centrality of the gospel, who are learning together to love God, to love people, and Peter Williams talked about that this morning, the two greatest commandments. No one can say that they aren't the two greatest commandments. So Christians are learning to love God, to love other people, other Christians and non-Christians, in their cultural context. That is my simple working definition of a healthy church. In other words, revitalization, and this is a word we're beginning to use more, is reconnecting your church. Reconnecting to God, reconnecting people with each other, and reconnecting to the community, the culture, the society in which you find yourself. And it's interesting that I've written a book on revitalization. I've written 10 books in French, but this is my first one in English, which is going to be published by IVP next February. And they wanted, and they've insisted on calling the book not revitalization, but reconnecting your church. And I think it's a good word. We're reconnecting with God, with others, and with society. Or to put it another way, the three-dimensional approach to building a healthy church, and I'm assuming that the gospel is central, is spiritual, social, and societal. Like any good preacher, you find three words with the same first letter. Spiritual, that is loving God. Social, loving others. And societal, That's the cultural context. Whereas revival is often just seen as individual and spiritual. Not always, but that's traditionally the way it was seen. I must be individually revived, and it's my relationship with God. But we're also talking in terms of relationships, socially, and society. So what does this healthy church look like? What is our vision? And this is where we have made this sort of infographic. This is a visual to help us to understand this is where we want to go. So on the left, you've got this definition of a healthy church through the gospel, loving God, loving others in the church's cultural context. But what does that equal? It equals gathered church plus scattered church. It's both. And often, churches have put all their money and their time and their energy into the gathered church. This is where the budget goes. That's not wrong, and I'll explain why. You need a church building, you need to pay your pastor, you need that. But you mustn't go from there to thinking the gathered church is more important than the scattered church. And we'll say why. The gathered church, what is it? The emphasis is on in the public events, if you like, in the gathered church. It's on your website. It's people can come. People can just walk into your building. No problem. It's a public event. But the scattered church, the emphasis is initiatives by Christians. And what are their initiatives? You see it in the blue box below. To do good and to share the gospel in their relational networks. And there are four main relational networks. The first thing is their family, their close family and their wider family. The second is their community, that is the neighbors, the place they live. The third is their place of work, or if they're a student, a school or university. And the fourth is their friends and their leisure time activities. And that covers nearly everything we do. And we have loads of relations with people in those areas. And so why is that important? Because this is the missional church in the true sense of missional church, meaning it's sent out. That the Christians are sent out to spend 98% probably of their time outside of the walls of the church. So they're sent out, it's missional. And what are they sent out to do? In internet terms, to be influencers. People need to see today what Christians are and what they do and how they believe and how they behave and what their families are like and everything else. That's what they need to see. And as I was saying to some people yesterday, I know that recently my wife, we had to buy a new cooker. The first thing she did was not to go to the shop, was to go on internet and see what other users recommended. That's the way it goes today. Or if you go to a restaurant or something, you look and see what other people think. Influencers, and that's what we are, salt and light, loving people, and sharing the gospel when we can in society. And this is probably, in most of our countries, the only way we can do it. We don't have a lot of access to media. In France, at least, we have a secular country. Christianity is never mentioned in the media. You'll never have a politician say, in this great tragedy, we must pray, or something, ever. In fact, if he said that, he would probably have to resign, because he wouldn't be in conformity with the Constitution of the Republic. So we don't have any very much access. What we do have is a people. And if you think, in fact, in this situation, we have, let's say, in you have 10, you know, 10 people in your family, you know another 10 people in your community, you have 10 work colleagues, you have 10 friends, or in your leisure activity, that's 40 people. So a church of just 10 people has 400 contacts. You don't have to make the contacts, they're there. But what we have to do is to train the people to know how to reach out and love people in their context. It just comes back to the gathered church. The reasons we meet together is for edification and training. In other words, we're worshiping God to realize who he is. We're learning about the society we live in. We're learning what the scriptures say about it, so that we're helping people then to live in the scattered church. And if you think, the only verse in the whole Bible, as far as I can say, that tells us specifically that we must go on meeting together, Hebrews 10, says why? To provoke each other, encourage each other to love and good works. In other words, loving and doing good things to people around us. That's why we meet together. And so there is some place for an attractional church. You can invite people to your church, no problem. But in fact, in today's world, most of those people will only come when they're invited by someone they know, a Christian, who they met in the missional church. So then we go through a whole process, which we won't be talking about so much this week, but I'll do a first sort of advertisement. We have a year-round mentoring group. If you want to belong to our year-round mentoring group, we go through all the process in detail. And so I invite you to join that. It's led jointly by myself and Daniel in the corner over there. We lead a year-round mentoring group. Quickly, you need the awareness of the need, the revitalization team, evaluate the state of the church, communicate the vision, define the process, and so on. That's the sort of things we have to do. This week, we can't go through that in detail. What we are going to do is try to get the vision clear, and then say, afterwards, how do we work? If you want to go more through the detail, you can join the year-round mentoring.